Just over a week after Election Day, the drama over Georgia's gubernatorial race is mounting. Yesterday at the Capitol, police arrested demonstrators insisting that every vote be counted before the election between Brian Kemp and Stacey Abrams be called. A federal judge delayed the deadline for certifying results until Friday. Notably, news organizations have not yet called the race, though Kemp leads Abrams by, at last count, about 17,000 votes. Some wins that were projected by the Associated Press on election night, like the Florida governor's race, could be headed for a recount, which got us wondering, with such high stakes and razor-thin margins, why do networks and news organizations declare results before all votes are counted? Well, lucky for us, a book published last month addresses that very question. Sharon Jarvis is co-author of Votes That Count and Voters Who Don't, How Journalists Sideline Electoral Participation Without Even Knowing It. She's Associate Professor of Communication Studies at the University of Texas and is joining us from KUT in Austin. Sharon, hello.
Hello, good morning.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. Now, many people have seen that photo, President-elect Harry Truman, wide smile, holding up the Dewey Defeats Truman headline of the Chicago Tribune. It was the wrong call when that went to press. Any lessons from that?
Oh, absolutely. So back in 1948, as you mentioned, over 47 million Americans voted, and the Chicago Tribune could not wait for them to be counted, though, before famously and falsely naming Thomas Dewey the winner. They were convinced by their pre-election polling numbers, which interestingly were largely to Republican landlines, and facing deadline pressures, they went ahead and named the winner. A review of other practices showed that that's not the only time that it happened. In 1964, even though 70 million Americans voted, news stations on the East Coast began discussing Lyndon B. Johnson's lead in the race. And then in 1980, perhaps of interest to your listeners, over 86 million Americans voted, and NBC called the contest for Republican Ronald Reagan at 8:15 p.m. on the East Coast, which led Jimmy Carter deliver his concession 90 minutes later, well before the polls had closed on the West.
Mm-hmm.
So reporters are prone to do these things and to call the elections early.
Well, and of course, 50 years later, after Harry Truman, another colossal error.
Stand by, stand by. CNN right now is moving our earlier declaration of Florida back to the too close to call column. This no longer is a victory for Vice President Gore. George Bush, governor of Texas, will become the 43rd president of the United States.
Well, that was CNN, but first NBC projected Al Gore would win Florida. Then it flipped to Governor George Bush, and then at 4 a.m. had to admit there was no clear winner. Tom Brokaw famously said, "We don't have egg on our face, we have an omelet." So what is this? Is this just herd mentality, rushing to get to press, in the case of the Chicago Tribune, rushing to beat the odds on network television?
Well, journalists admit that elections are their most important story, and they're honest about how they feel both time pressures. They want to be first with the facts, and they want to get them correctly. So there is a little bit of herd mentality. They do acknowledge that after they miss these calls, they'll self-reflect in newsrooms, but it is something that is prone, as you note, to happen.
Well, so you interviewed reporters about this for your research. What did they tell you?
That they want to do better. I was really struck by the initial instinct that they want to be first with the facts, but they routinely, after each election, want to do better. So I imagine that there are many across the country right now who are grateful for the recounts and the opportunity to wait for the voters' voices to be heard.
And you analyzed 68 years of election night's coverage, or election coverage, rather. Besides declaring results on election night, are they generally accurate?
Yes, absolutely. What's interesting is reporters were shaken by the Chicago Tribune error in 1948, and our research shows that coverage between 1948 and 1968 regularly focused on how voters decide elections. People were routinely signaled power, and there was less emphasis on forecasting and prediction during those years. Yet in the early 1970s, once reporters became more comfortable with polls again, a lot of the power went to strategists and forecasting, and that really did shift the story of elections in the United States.
Well, you reporters may have been chastened, but you do raise the question in your book, heading into Election Day, has the electorate been cued as central or superfluous to Democratic life? What do you mean by that, and what'd you find?
Absolutely. So we did, again, a content analysis of how the words vote, voter, and voting have appeared in print news coverage of presidential elections from 1948 to 2016. Six newspapers, one of them was the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and we found some really powerful effects. First, from 1948 to 1968, as I alluded a moment ago, the word vote appeared six times more frequently than the word voter. That flipped between the years 1972 and 2016, except for the year 2008. And even though it seems like a modest, trivial thing, when reporters are writing about votes, votes are sought, they're decisive, and they directly affect campaign outcomes. In contrast, voters receive very thin personalization and were also often treated as undecided or intimidated or cynical. And so that modest shift between the word vote and voter is important. We found through our experiments and focus groups that both Democrats and Republicans respond very well to news coverage that focuses on votes. It makes them want to participate, and it makes them less cynical with the media. In contrast, coverage of voters, where voters are being dismissed, again, both Democrats and Republicans don't want to vote, and Republicans particularly voice frustration with the media.
So with election night getting so big, it's a huge moneymaker for networks. Do you anticipate it changing, especially after this year when there were so many recounts? Not recounts, but pressures now. It looks like we're heading towards recounts.
Absolutely. We hope so. Other things that we found in the experiments is when voters are given a more active role to play, it does affect interest in the news and it decreases frustration. So there is an incentive for reporters to take their time and tell richer stories about voters.
Just a minute left, Sharon. The question is about the legitimacy of voting or whether or not people have faith in the system. What does this early call do, or this early call trend do, towards that sense of faith in the system?
Absolutely. Traditionally, scholars have looked at this in a quantitative way. For instance, are the forecasts inaccurate, or did they get the call wrong? In my research, I try to look at it in more of a qualitative way, in that it does signal that that we should give more power to the voter. By calling these things early, it erodes our sense of our contribution to the system.
Sharon Jarvis, Associate Professor at UT Austin, co-author of Votes That Count and Voters Who Don't. Thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
And we want to make a correction to a figure from earlier in the program. Democrat Stacey Abrams is not 17,000 votes behind Kemp. She needs more than 17,000 votes to force a runoff in the race for governor against Republican Brian Kemp.